Hello, this is your host, Jigme Kelting, and welcome to the Jigme Kelting Show, a podcast where sit-down speakers, singers, songwriters, musicians, sports personalities, actors, radio broadcasters, and a slew of many other professionals from a broad range of fields. This news conversation, sports analyst, professional hockey scout, and founder of the pro hockey group, Jason Bukala, talks about the excitement around this year's NHL All-Star Weekend, upcoming trade deadline, Professional Women's Hockey League, and more, as well as who he's got winning the Super Bowl. And now, with that being said, I hope you enjoy the episode. Hello, Jason. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Jigme. Nice to see you, pal.
It's great to see you. And I've been really doing a lot of sort of just looking around and poking my head around, just seeing what's out there and what's the latest news and the headlines of the National Hockey League. And of course, the All-Star festivities are taking place, and obviously that's an exciting time. And we know that Bieber will be there, of course, as the celebrity captain, and as you can see, repping the Bieber sort of jersey that he's created for the Leafs this year, so which is a really cool. And I guess the what is sort of when you look at the All-Star festivities and the All-Star game in particular, what is like the most exciting sort of skill competition or skills game that you sort of look to for every year in the All-Stars, I guess?
Well, for me personally, I always look forward to the fastest skater competitions. I think they're fascinating. I mean, obviously, I hope that nobody blows a tire and gets hurt buzzing around the rink, but that's always fascinating. In the past, it's some of the skills, as have been dummied down a little bit, I guess you could say, for showmanship. But obviously the accuracy shot too, that's kind of fun, blowing up the targets. So those types of things it bring a lot of people back to when they were playing in their driveway as kids, firing tennis balls or pucks at targets. So that's always a fun one.
For sure. And I guess one of the highlights for me when I saw like past All-Star games and All-Star skills competitions, when Matthews was taking, I guess, the accuracy shooting, and when he was in San Jose, I loved when he took off his jersey and he pulled out a Marleau jersey all of a sudden, and the crowd erupted in cheers. And you gotta love to see that when Matthews pulls out a Marleau and just does a little honor of the Patty guy there, and what a legendary player he's been for that franchise, and what a great job he's been doing for the development group there as well for the younger players of the San Jose Sharks. Well, I mean, talking about players, I guess the important thing is I know we're all excited about the All-Stars, but I think we can get down to the nitty-gritty about the trade deadline looming, and we know that there's been lots of conversation around here in the city about what is going to happen for the Maple Leafs. And I think that's been the biggest question for every hockey fan here. We know, and I've seen one of the clips that you were talking about, but the Leafs sort of falling short in terms of the lack of draft capital, but also the lack of assets they have to give up in order to get the players that are big name or headline names in terms of the trade deadline and trades in general. We hear a lot about Nick Robertson, we've heard a lot about Cowan, we've heard a lot about Minton, and we heard a lot about Nyes. And I know there's been a whole speculation about, well, we've heard the names of Nyes, Cowan, Minton many, many times from Elliot Friedman saying that those are the three guys that the Leafs are getting many calls on, but they're not willing to part with them, especially when they're looking for D. What do you make of this whole thing with the Leafs looking for D? And I know they've been looking for D for many, many years. It's not a first year thing. Let's not get that wrong, or let's not get that twisted. But what do you make of this whole Minton, Nyes, Cowan sort of the trade talk involving the Leafs, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of mentioned it at the beginning there, and that is the reality that the franchise finds itself in right now, and that is that they don't have a lot of draft capital to deal with. They're dealing from a position of weakness in terms of the amount of draft picks that they have to use in trade scenarios, especially at a trade deadline. This isn't the off season where you might be able to acquire somebody, say at the draft, flip a first round pick or a different pick into a player that you're going to have for a full year, for example, or maybe with term. Ideally, they'd like to get somebody with term, but that's really hard to do at the trade deadline to fit them under the cap. So there's a lot of moving parts. I would not be parting with any one of those prospects that you mentioned. Obviously, they're part of the future, Nyes, Cowan, and Minton. And because their draft capital has been compromised in recent years, it's very important not to lose focus of the reality that it's okay to kind of take pause. You don't have to add every year. Take stock of where you're at with your franchise and your group, and with the cap going up, kind of reload, if you will, a little bit in the off season. And those guys will be a year older, right? Your prospects. So hopefully they have more impact next year.
Course, and I guess I just want to really just go down the line here with the with according to Cap Friendly about the Leafs draft capital here, because of course a lot of people are speculating whether or not the Leafs are in a position where they can deal first round picks. Now I can tell you they are in a position where they can deal first round picks, but the picks are not pretty. The picks are probably going to be in the late 20s to probably early 30s, probably around there. And it's not as valuable as people may think. But the idea that I sort of went down the line of, and I looked down at all their draft picks that they have now in stock, and I look at their prospects and I say, okay, so if the Leafs are unwilling to part with a guy like Nyes, Minton, or Cowan, what do you look for in terms of, I guess, the prospect? What do you see in terms of reflecting not a first round pick, but looking at a player that could be first round pick potentially, to part with in a trade? That can't be Nyes, Minton, and Cowan, right? And that's just the idea that I had in my mind where I'm like, okay, so if you're not going to be able to deal a first round pick, and specifically, do you look at a player that could be projected to be a first round pick potential to deal in a trade to make teams be more enticed to take that on rather than their draft capital, right? I mean, that's just the idea I had.
Yeah, no, that is a wise idea. So, and that's how teams look at it. They look at where the draft slot is in relation to the current draft class or the homework that they've done for future drafts. So NHL teams clearly are doing their homework for this year's draft cycle. That's a given. They've also started for future draft cycles, scouting the future. So if they have a really good feel for, this draft compared to another draft, they might be enticed to take that first round pick. If you look at a player like Cowan, who's drafted 28th overall by Toronto, your example is perfect for him because, it's if their pick falls in pick, it's going to be in the mid-20s, I think, just based on where they are in the standings. So, if it's like 23, 22, 23, something like that, is it more valuable than, say, what Cowan was last year at 28 if you're looking at that player as a name? That's all part of the strategy. That's what goes into the conversation. I can't say for certain at this point if I believe that at 22 or 23 for this draft cycle, if they're going to be better than Cowan, that's to be determined still. And that's the risk because you've only got a month left here before the trade deadline to figure out if I part with my first rounder and I hold on to Cowan, to your example. Which is going to prove out to be more valuable for the franchise, my franchise going forward, never mind the franchise that's acquiring one of those two assets.
For sure. And I guess also like to also mention the other names that could be in play here that they could part with if they didn't want to deal those guys. Like I look at a guy like Topi Niemelä. I look at guys like Liljegren that's already in the D pairing, but do they see him as a future long-term pairing with the Leafs? And you look at a guy like TJ Brodie. Now he's probably going to be into unrestricted free agency soon. And where is he gonna go? Is he gonna sign long term in Toronto, or do they move off of TJ Brodie now, instead of losing him for free and losing him for nothing, basically? Do they part with TJ Brodie now more than just wait for July 1st to roll around and hope to God that you can get a deal done for him somewhere on another team? But I guess that's just the whole thing with, I guess, the whole trade deadline part of it as well, is managing the thought of, okay, when do I strike here? Do I like what I'm seeing in terms of offers from other teams? Do I look at other D pairings? Do I look at defensemen that might be available that makes us happy with that we can part with these players? But when you look at the trade bait board and you look at people like Chris Tanev, You look at Mario Ferraro, who's been probably one of the more sneaky additions if anybody wants him. When you look at those players in terms of the trade bait wise, and when you look at the Leafs and their need for defense, what sort of stands out in terms of that aspect, I guess?
Well, I think that, when you're talking about a player like Kristanev, who's got a lot of miles on his tires, he'd be a nice add for the short term and potentially fill a spot in the offseason if he decided. Like, he's obviously a Toronto guy. He's born and raised in the area. So he might be looking at, if they were to acquire him, he might be interested in signing a extension to stay in Toronto. Now, that extension, in my mind, shouldn't go anything or go any longer than 2 years. And it's also my belief that he might get 3 years somewhere else. So you have to kind of factor all that into the equation. Maybe the Leafs do go 3 years with him if they acquire him. I'm not sure. Obviously, Brad Treliving's got intimate knowledge of Tanev with from his time in Calgary. Mario Ferraro, that is a sneaky type of a potential add, if you will. Not a lot of people here in Ontario pay a lot of attention to what's going on in San Jose. And this is a player that although he's not huge in stature, he moves well, blocks shots, does a lot of things very well on a poor team. So statistically, his numbers don't look great, but it is what it is playing where he's at. So that there is an add that would fit the structure of the group going forward. Like that's a nice fit long term if they can make something like that happen and make something fit within their cap strategy in the offseason. There's going to be a lot of moving parts there. But you mentioned Niemela and you mentioned Liljegren. I don't see how they can move off of Liljegren. He's got to play minutes. They've developed him. He might be maxed out right now. That's very possible. But given the state of the team for this year, especially, I don't see how they can look at moving him out. And because they'd be having to add a couple of pieces in because that makes their defense core even weaker than it is right now. TJ Brodie, I would use him as my own rental. Personally, I don't think that you're necessarily going to get an upgrade on him in the market beyond what we've already discussed here. So use him as an own rental. And I actually wouldn't be looking to extend Brodie in the offseason. I would look to retool the back end a different way with some younger blood.
For sure. And I guess also mentioning the fact that there are options out there that they could part with where or they could add at the deadline here. And I know that I've heard a lot about this talk about and I think it's nonsense where people like Elliot Friedman, which I totally respect and I wholeheartedly admire his work and stuff, but the notion that insiders that are giving fans is, well, it sounds like the Leafs management group internally feel like this is not the year for them to win. They don't believe they can win this year. They're looking at the long-term thing and saying, okay, what can we get out there for defensemen that we can begin to reshape our blue line with? And in terms of, I guess, retooling in a way and sort of Brad Treliving officially putting his stamp on his team. Because I don't think he has done that yet. I think he's made the tinkering moves in terms of, okay, what can we see out there? Do we like this? Do we not experiment with it? Then the next year after, you go full on and see if he can make over, pull a whole makeover of this team and see how that looks in the next season. I mean, in terms of this whole subject on the Maple Leafs and their needs, that might be of concern, but when you look at the positives, you see the big guys like Matthews, you see the guys like Nylander, and you see the guys like Marner and Tavares. And yeah, Tavares has been cold for some games, but getting back to that goal in Winnipeg, it's got to be great to see Tavares get off that schneid and finally just have some confidence. And he kept saying that, if I'm not scoring, I just got to keep winning those puck battles and winning those face-off battles that he's so well known at, and wait for opportunities to crash the net and get tips on and redirections, and that's how you got to get those goals and get the luck going your way again. What do you make of this whole confidence thing with the Maple Leafs? Because I guess confidence has been an important thing, especially for goaltending wise for this team. When you hear the word confidence in general, like, what do you define that as, I guess?
Well, so it's multi-tiered. certainly from the management perspective, you know, how much confidence do they have in this roster and the way that it's structured to go on a deep playoff run? And you know, in relation to, do you want to spend more capital with this group to, you know, again, potentially add to go on a run? Last year, they added a lot and they got through a round. But, you know, certainly this year, you know, they're leaking. They've got some holes that they'd like to plug. Like we talked about the defense here. The goaltending is seems to be coming back to life, which is a real positive. Up front, you know, you talk about Tavares. That's the good thing about a guy like John Tavares is that when he's not scoring, he does do some heavy lifting elsewhere, wins face-offs, you know, net front, even creating a distraction if it doesn't end up on his stick. Those are positive things. But I'm with Elliot, and I fully support what Elliot's thinking here. And that is, and actually, I'm on record by saying this, that I'm not looking to add to this group. Like, I really believe that we need to kind of take a year here to reset. Tree Living is going to take the entire year. He's going to take a look at what he has, what he doesn't have. And that's a lot of tiers, draft capital, asset management in the minors in Europe, et cetera, that they already own. And then, of course, money in the offseason. They got a lot of money coming off the books. So, you know, the Bertuzzi contract comes off, the Domi contract comes off, the Brody contract comes off. You go all the way down the line. And so there's an opportunity to kind of attack it a different way in the offseason. All of that is kind of predicated on how confident you are in the group as it sits right now. And I don't think it's like they lack confidence. It's just that they're being realistic compared to some of the other teams in the league.
Yeah, and we've also heard a lot about the Pittsburgh Penguins recently, about Kyle Dubas and seeing what the position that the Penguins are in this season, where they look like they might be looking on the outside in terms of playoffs because they're losing critical games when they have to win those ones. And they're just getting those wins a little bit too late in the season. And you can't be doing that if you're the Pittsburgh Penguins. And with the team that they basically loaded. They absolutely loaded in the free agent period. Like they added Nedeljkovic, they added Erik Karlsson in via trade. Then they went on to add some other players. They added Noel Achari, and so forth. But I guess when you look at the Pittsburgh Penguins, for example, and this goes ties right back into the Maple Leafs perspective of it too, where I heard recently about. Okay, so the Pittsburgh Penguins are basically saying we want to retool here. We don't think we can win this year either. So if we're going to be in sort of a rebuild, not a rebuild, but I would say like a retooling process in multiple years here and seeing, okay, so if we're not going to be buyers this year and we don't have draft capital enough to make significant deals, what we can do here is we can offload some players and recoup some assets back in terms of draft picks and sort of restock the whole thing, then go for it in another couple of years and see where it goes for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And I think that's where you're seeing the Maple Leafs perspective come into play here too, where they're saying, okay, we can reset here, but do we want to wait here for a couple of years and see where this team stands? Or do they think next year when they reshape the whole lineup, that they can go for it and win the cup? And that's the biggest question I think that a lot of teams are asking, especially the Penguins. What do you make of Kyle Dubas's time with the Penguins so far, I guess?
Well, I mean, he walked into a situation where he's obviously got an elite core of players that were still in win mode, especially between the years, you know. But the reality of the group itself, you know, has to take, you have to take stock of the reality, unfortunately. You know, like that group is aging out. They've had Hall of Fame careers, the core group there. And, you know, you bring up an interesting point because, you know, Toronto. The difference, of course, in Toronto so far is that the Pittsburgh Penguin core, surrounded by some other players like Marc-Andre Fleury in the past, et cetera, they won Stanley Cups, right, in their late 20s, and they were, you know, achieving the they climbed the mountain already, if you will. And Toronto hasn't accomplished that yet, and they're obviously believing in their core that they can get that done if they surround them with the right pieces. And you know, time will tell. In Pittsburgh itself. You know, I think he's of the belief that if we could just get in, anything's possible. And we've seen that in the past, you know, the Florida Panthers, for example, last year. And certainly with the Sidney Crosbys and the Malkins of the world, Letangs, Carlsons, etc., anything's possible if you get in playoffs. I understand the sentiment. But the reality is, Guentzel is the other guy. And the reality there is with a guy like Guentzel becoming a UFA in the summertime, where do you go? And where are we in our cycle here? It's going to be interesting to see what Pittsburgh does. I don't know what they're going to do, but time will tell.
Of course, and I guess just recapping the whole thing here about I guess when we're looking around the league and you're seeing teams improve and you're seeing teams like Vegas and you see teams like the Edmonton Oilers all of a sudden on a hot streak when they fire their coach and they brought in Chris Knobloch and all of a sudden they're red hot and they're now unbeatable and people are saying they may never win a game again, never lose again, and I guess that's just the difference between Toronto and Edmonton and Vegas is just you gotta have depth. You gotta have that core group where, okay, you gotta commit yourself to winning games here and commit to playing as a team. Because when you have a core group locked up with that much money, and I know people will be concerned about that, the money wise, about Nylander being paid a lot and he's being paid 8 years, and Tavares coming off of a contract. You're going to see Marner probably in a contract year where he might pop off again as well. It's just a whole thing with this whole pattern with the Leafs where it's like they sit a year off and then they come back the next year and they surprise you again, and then the next year after that they take you on a roller coaster ride. It's rock bottom and then they take you right back up the slope, and it's again it's another rock bottom moment. And now I guess you're seeing that once more with the start that they've had this season where it's just been flat out just horrible for the Leafs, I think. To say the least. I mean, speaking of, I guess, the whole roller coaster ride, this year, I guess, as we're talking about the All-Stars now, the All-Star game coming up, and I know the excitement that's rising here in the city of Toronto. And we know that the PWHL 3-on-3 showcase is happening. But before I talk about that, I want to get your thoughts on what do you think about the Professional Women's Hockey League so far and the work that they've been doing this year?
Well, I think it's great for the game. They've got the crowds have been really supportive, and I hope it's sustainable. That's my it's always my biggest concern in anything that's new, any sport, any expansion franchise or whatever, a relocation of a team even that is it sustainable in terms of the interest? Everybody likes to go one time, but are they going to come back the second, third, fourth time? I think the product's excellent. I think people are coming back. I think men, ladies, boys, girls, everybody's buying into the enthusiasm. The whole model is changed to the point where they're really engaged. And if anybody wants to take the time, and they should take the time to support this and watch a full game. These ladies are elite athletes who are competing extremely hard. There's a physical element to it. There's speed, there's skill, there's great goaltending, and the crowds have been fantastic. I watched a game recently in Minnesota. I think it was Bo yeah, Boston was playing in Minnesota, I believe it was, and they had over 13,000 people at the XL Energy Center in Minneapolis, St. Paul. So, anything that we any exposure everybody can provide for the game, and any type of long-lasting impact. The more young girls that want to get involved, the more opportunities for college athletes, college female athletes, junior athletes. I don't care who you are. The more opportunities for everybody, the better. And I hope that this is not only sustainable, I hope they do really well for a long, long time.
Of course, and I guess, and I will agree with that sentiment and share into that sentiment as well. But I was just watching. I've watched every single PWHL Toronto game so far this season, and I've been just keeping tabs on what's happening with this team. And I guess one of the themes that you're seeing from PWHL Toronto this season is they've not been able to win a lot in home at home this season, which has been a I guess I don't want to put this into the Leafs perspective because I know it's going to come and I know it's going to happen. I've seen it on Twitter already from one person about Okay, here we go. Toronto meet the Toronto Maple Leafs, where you
Oh
can't win at
no.
home this season. And I guess you're seeing that a lot, but they're also giving up goals. They're giving up leads in games where they should be closing it out. And I just keep going back to it. I'm like, oh no, this better not be the Toronto Maple Leafs all over again. And it's just the Toronto sports thing, I guess, where they can't close out a game. But hey, I will say, I thought their recent game, I thought Natalie Spooner was just outstanding and provided a really good opportunity for this team to win games. And their goaltending has been a rocky start, but I think Campbell, aka Soup, is probably going to get she's going to get red hot here soon. And I know that they're going to get their footing back on track here. But I guess in terms of the PWHL 3-on-3 showcase, what I'm excited to see is Sarah Nurse. I'm excited to see what she'll pull off this season, because I know the last All-Star game, she took on a shootout with the NHL goaltender, and she pulled off a Peter Forsberg attempt there, and the crowd went nuts, and she gave a little chuckle to the camera. And I'm curious to see what moves she'll make this season with the 3-on-3 showcase. I mean, she's got to pull off like another Peter Forsberg, or do another what's it called, those lacrosse style goals. I would love to see that.
Like a Michigan
That'd
style
be
goal or
cool.
something like that. Yeah, no, she I've had the privilege of working with her a few times on Sportsnet when she's been less, well, she's obviously swamped with this right now, but in the past, like last year, we had a chance to work with her a couple times on the panel, and let me tell you, she's just she brightens up a room, you know what I mean? Like she's one of those personalities that's just fun to be around, and I think that you're bang on, especially with this being in Toronto. I'm sure she's gonna pull something out of her hat to entertain the people in the building, and you know, she's that's a personality that's just great for the game on a variety of re levels, you know, and the most important one, of course, is being the fact that skill, and she's from our area in Toronto, which is great for the growth of the game. And you talked about Natalie Spooner. I mean, you know, Natalie Spooner. She's just an elite athlete. Well, she's obviously been well decorated on the international stage. Come back to play pro hockey after you know, celebrating the birth of a child, and you know, all these things, the commitment and you know, the desire to take your game and take advantage of the opportunity that's been given someone like her. Like what an ambassador for the sport and a great role model for the PWHL.
For sure. And I guess also just highlighting again the All-Star festivities, of course, Team Matthews being Captain Austin Matthews, and his fifth All-Star appearance, and assistant captain Morgan Rielly. Celebrity captain is Justin Bieber, and their jersey color is blue. And I don't get the whole sentiment about this disagreement about whether the jerseys look nice or they look bad. I mean, they're better than the St. Louis ones, I will tell you that. Like that, I really do agree with the fact that they look better than the St. Louis All-Star jerseys, because I thought the All-Star jerseys in St. Louis were terrible, like just god awful. Like there's absolutely no design to it. What was different about this and this year's jerseys? I mean.
Yeah, you know, this obviously isn't my lane. I'm not into the jersey design so much, but I will say this, that you know, like my 16-year-old who's here in the house studying for an exam right now, he thinks the jerseys are great. Also, I think that's the point, isn't it? You know, I just old guys like me who've been in the league forever can remember back to some hideous looking All-Star jerseys way, way back that were just, you know, orange and black with stars on them, and you know, they weren't, I shouldn't say they were hideous, but there wasn't a lot of creation to it, not a lot of creative mindset went into it. And I'm all for this stuff. I mean, like, you know what? Anything that gets us talking about an event like the All-Star, whether it be the jerseys or an event, whatever the case may be, that's a positive. Negative or positive, whatever the discussion is, it is a positive, believe it or not, for the game. And you watch, these jerseys will fly off the shelves. They've got the oversized crest on them, which is authentic, if you will, and I'm sure everybody will be pleased by the end of the event.
Hopefully I'll be able to get my hands on one of those jerseys, but and until I do, I think just another theme that I would love to see happen is Since Austin Matthews pulled off that Marlowe jersey in the San Jose All-Star game, I wonder if this year he'll pull off an Natalie Spooner jersey in honor of PWHL Toronto and the work they've been doing as well. Like I just wonder if Austin Matthews will pull off a PWHL special thing with this year's festivities happening in the city. Well, I mean, on February 27th, I think we have the Vegas Golden Knights coming in town to take on the Buds, which I will be in attendance for. I will be going to see that Vegas game, and it's gonna be exciting. And you know, it's th this is gonna be a real test for Toronto, where whether or not they can compete with the Cup champs, basically. You know, like, this is actually like probably one of the defining matchups of the season, where, all right, so can you at least like contend with them with the roster they have now? And if they can contend with the roster they have now and they beat them, both in Vegas and in Toronto, does the plans change about waiting until next year? Because that's just a whole question I wonder about.
That's a interesting trap you just proposed there. So you have to go by the body of the work, right? You have to go by a body of work for an extended period of time and see where your team is by, call it February 27th or before. I believe that with the cap situation that a lot of the contending teams find themselves in, that unless there's a three-team trade that's made where, you know, money gets kind of shelved with another partner in between before the player lands on your doorstep, I think that you're going to see some mostly activity potentially bump right up to the trade deadline just because of money. So to your point, the 27th, depending on what kind of heater the Leafs find themselves on by that time, potentially that's a game that's the measuring stick to make that final decision. That's definitely one of those ones in the calendar that I'm sure management takes a look at and says, let's see where we are come this time and really kind of say, okay, are we going to do something or aren't we? And they've got some time. February is going to be a fascinating month for not only Toronto but all these teams that are kind of in that cluster to see if there's some separation.
And for all Leaf fans who are just wondering about whether or not they'll be good in February, well, if you look down the list of the calendars of their histories of Februaries, their most prominent month that they play successfully in is February, folks. I've done the research and I've seen the history of their Februaries and their monthly schedule, their monthly records, and January is probably their god-awful month of the years. And so I'm just saying, I wouldn't be surprised if they somehow pulled off an Edmonton Oilers. Not saying they're going to win 16 straight, but they're going to find a way to be inspired by that Edmonton Oilers run and somehow start a run of their own. And then we're going to be all talking about how god awful this defense was, and they're going to be like, "Oh my God, Simon Benoit has been a legend and has pulled off something out of his hat." And well, I mean, with that being said, I guess we've reached the end of our time together. But one more question, I guess, is, for this upcoming Super Bowl that is happening, who do you got on the pick here, I guess?
Well, you know what, I'm going with Kansas City only because they had that little bit of a hiccup towards the end of the year. They weren't very good for a period there, a stretch. That's pro sports, that happens. But I like the momentum and the fact that they're defending champs and they've already figured out how to do it. Last year with this group, I'm leading Kansas City, and it has nothing to do with Taylor Swift. It's got everything to do with the guys who suited up and play the game. How about you? Who you got?
Well, I mean, well, we've all seen that talk about the Swift Bowl, and I think that might be the theme of this year. And instead of calling it the Super Bowl, we're going to call it the Swift Bowl, because I think Kansas City will ultimately win in this year. But if I'm going to be rooting for any team, I think it's going to be the San Francisco Niners, 49ers here. I just think that the way that they came back against the Lions, and they found themselves down early, but they found a big second half, and they pulled off a pulled something out of their hat and pulled off a comeback. So if anybody can pull off a comeback against the Kansas City Chiefs, it'd probably be the San Francisco 49ers, because that's a rematch that they have done before as well. So that'll be exciting, especially to see what kind of reaction we're going to get if Travis Kelce loses this match. And yes, Travis Kelce's girlfriend, Taylor Swift, will be able to make the Super Bowl game, because she is flying in from Tokyo because she has a concert the day before the Super Bowl, so which is going to be interesting. Well, I mean, it's been a pleasure to be able to talk to you today and just pick your brain all about the trade deadline and the All-Star festivities. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with sports analyst, professional hockey scout, founder of the Pro Hockey Group, Jason Bukla. If you enjoyed the episode, and you'd like to help support the podcast, feel free to share with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating or review. To catch all the latest from me, you can follow the show on all social media platforms. I've been your host, Shig Mikhail, saying thanks for tuning into the show.